Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I like experimenting with different things that bring me joy and finding out what the Becky of today is wanting and needing and liking.
Hello and welcome to The Body Protest.
In this podcast, we combine storytelling with science to better understand our relationship with our bodies. I'm Nadia Craddock and I'm a body image researcher.
And I'm Honey Ross and I'm a writer. This podcast is brought to you by The Pink Protest.
3, 2, 1.
Hi, hey, body protesters. So you always say hey, that's the other thing.
I say hey.
I say
and
hi.
And then I get shy halfway through the end of the word protesters.
And then
I'm
you
like,
go
and then you go off screen.
We're getting there. I love that we're kind of figuring out each other's approach. And we're going to get, by the end of the season, by the season finale, we're going to do it perfectly.
It's going to be beautiful. Honey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. The sun is shining. An ice cream van's coming to my house today because of hashtag influencer shit.
Oh my goodness. What? I'm so envious. Ice cream is like my favourite food group.
I can't believe it's happening. I genuinely am like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me from being on Instagram. So I'm very, I will send you updates and photos. But I don't know if I should, can
you can't.
No, I can. An Adidas X ASOS ice cream van is coming to my house. And I can't wait.
That sounds so much fun. Well, yeah, you have to
I will share
updates. Share updates.
How are you, my love?
I'm very well. As you say, the sun is shining. I feel like I've said this so many times over the last 2 weeks, but I feel my whole personality shifts when the sky is blue and the sun is out and it's I don't have goosebumps all over my skin.
It makes a difference not feeling excessively cold all of the time. Like, I think the minute it's a bit more warmth, it's just like everything's easier. Yeah. And everyone's nicer to each other. Everyone's smiling.
Yeah, everyone feels slightly lifted, don't they?
It's serotonin and the vitamin D is just pouring over us like honey.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
My goodness. Just bathing in it. We have such an exciting episode today. We're not going to do a long, big spiel, but you're just going to love this episode. So we speak with Becky Young, founder and director of Anti-Diet Riot Club, and just the most joyful, radiant, wonderful person.
Authentically herself, goddess. She is. And she will introduce herself. But yeah, we're very excited about this episode and we hope you enjoy it. So here's Becky.
Becky, welcome to The Body Protest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, we're so excited to speak with you. Could you give us a quick intro to yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, I'm Becky Young. I'm the founder and co-director of Anti-Diet Riot Club. I run it alongside the wonderful Harry Rose. And we are a social enterprise and rebel community fighting back against diet culture and trying to educate people on the harmful effects of diet culture, body shame and fat phobia, and empower people to live their lives in their bodies authentically now rather than waiting for a future body or aesthetic goal, which we feel really holds people back and dims people's light. So we're trying to spread that message, and we do it through workshops, talks, content. We have an online membership community where we host loads of different events and sharing circles and support groups, as well as having a social media platform that we sort of post educational content and collaborate with lots of other incredible experts and give them a platform as well.
Phenomenal. You do such incredible work. The community is so vibrant. I wonder if we get into that a little bit and talk about it a bit more. And I think perhaps for people who are less familiar with some of these terms, like, what do you mean by anti-diet?
What do I mean by anti-diet? Well, it's not what people would think, in that I'm when people are a bit devil's advocate-y and they're like, well, diet just means what you eat, or, you know, diet just means, you know, what you put in your mouth. It doesn't have to mean something to do with like body goals. We're not anti people eliminating foods from their diet because of medical reasons or for allergy reasons. We're really specifically anti the rules, the restrictions, the external guides to how we should be living and eating and moving, these things that take us away from our like internal body wisdom, that make us not trust our bodies and make us think we have to eat and move and treat our bodies in a certain way in order to be beautiful and healthy and happy and attractive. And that body trust is something that we're actually very pro. Anti-diet is actually really pro-life, and it's pro, not in the weird anti-abortion, not in a weird anti-abortion way, but in a pro, like gaining your independence and freedom back, gaining your authenticity back. We're pro pleasure, pro joy, pro you know, sex. It's not actually that we're although we're called Anti-Diet Riot Club, we like to see us as like actually trying to give people a more positive outlook and mindset. We are angry and we are fighting against this diet culture, which you guys discuss so much on this podcast. All of that messaging that's telling us our body isn't good enough and that thin is the ideal and that we should be striving for that at all costs. But also we're trying to inspire a much more positive outlook.
Hearing you talk actually really reminds me of Virgie Tova talking about practicing abundance and talking about that kind of celebration of life and learning to just, I don't know, live really fully. And I think that's so what you do with Anti-Diet Riot Club. I'm so glad it's a space you've created. What has running Anti-Diet Riot Club taught you about yourself?
So much. I started Anti-Diet Riot Club as a kind of passion project on the side. I was and am on my own journey and adventure of trying to learn to break away from the mindset that I've lived in for years, which is that I should be smaller in order to be a better person. And to do that, I wanted to use my experience running events to bring people together to create an in real life community for myself. I had made incredible connections online, but I didn't have really people in real life. And now I have so many, which is incredible, including you two. And I have learnt that for me, that community has been so vital. So I need people to bounce off ideas with. I need people that I can feel safe to talk about these topics with. I don't feel safe with certain people to talk around this with because I know that they don't understand. And at first I thought that, you know, I had to sort of keep it all in and I had to go through this kind of journey on my own. But I realized that I feel so much stronger and so much reaffirmed when I do it with other people or in tandem with other people. So that's kind of like, you know, the basics of why I set it up and what I've got from it. But in terms of actually running a community and setting it up as a social enterprise, and it's called a community interest company in the UK, and it's now turned into this business enterprise, which I wasn't expecting or even had planned for it to be. In doing that, I've learned so much about myself and about my resilience, my lack of resilience in certain aspects of life. I'm such a perfectionist. I'm such a people pleaser. I really hate getting things wrong and disappointing people, and I take a lot of criticism incredibly personally. So I've learned that I'm bad at dealing with failure. And I think that's my like high achieving past and my like the, you know, probably lots of stuff to work through in therapy about my parents or the praise I got from them. But it's been a real learning curve to try and actually, you know, just fail and get back up again and do things wrong and learn from them and own up to mistakes and to not take everything so personally, especially when we have this, you know, huge Instagram community, which, you know, was just a means of promoting our events and workshops. And now it's got an entity of its own. And we, you know, we reach a lot of people through the content that we post there. And we hopefully give a platform to lots of other experts, but it also comes with community management responsibilities, and that can be quite difficult online. I think Instagram fosters a sense of amazing community, but it also is anonymous in some ways. There's obviously trolls, there's obviously, you know, propensity for everyone to try and pick everything that you do apart, and some of it's so welcome and like needed because we need it to grow, and we have used it to be better as an organization, and some of it is just really difficult to deal with, and I'm a little worse. So I've learned to be a little bit thicker skinned when it comes to that.
But also I feel like you've created a space that's so special, but we are in the spaces we work in so exposed to fat phobia, and I'm sure there's an element of like not needing to be thicker skinned, it's that people need to be less shitty. Like, I'm not sure if that's me, but you know, I feel like you're doing a very amazing job.
Because the Antidote Riot Club isn't centred, the Instagram page isn't centred around images of myself, and we post a lot of photos of fat bodies, but they're not me. And so I feel like Antidote Riot Clubs get a lot less trolls from people who are fat phobic. And I think that people like to troll an account which is clearly personal to that person. Mm. Like it's intentional that they choose certain accounts because they're more vulnerable.
Well, yeah, because they want to target them as more vulnerable. They target the person, the individual, rather.
The person,
that's so
the
interesting,
individual.
Right.
So we don't actually get a high volume of trolls. And we do get them. I just delete them. And, you know, if they're anything about anyone else that's being posted, then I remove them. If they're like questioning and asking, you know, curious, then I can respond if I have the energy. But if I feel like it's going to be harmful to anyone else in a marginalized body who's going to be reading the comments, then I just am quite brutal and I delete.
Oh, I hear that.
Because I want to keep it like a community space. And the stuff I receive about myself is probably more limited because I'm in a, you know, small fat body. So it's, again, I get have a lot of privilege in that sense that I can do this work and not receive the hatred that, you know, super fat and infinity fat people would receive doing the same work. I think for me it's often actually criticism from like within the movement, people who are in agreement that we need to be fighting against diet culture and other oppressive systems but want us to do it better or want us to do it in a different way. And I think, you know, as I said, like a lot of that is really welcome and we need that as you know, people who are trying to fight against systems, we also need to be fighting against our own internal biases and stuff. So I think it's just also a process of learning how to be more resilient and just not take it so personally, because it's not personal, mm-hmm. It's political.
Yeah, I can see that feedback coming, and I think it's people wanting change and sometimes putting it or the responsibility of that change on someone else. And I don't know how to describe it, but I completely see that happening within the community. And I can also see how it can feel overwhelming because you're doing this work to try your best, right? And sometimes it can feel maybe that your best is not good enough and you're trying. But I wonder if there's been things that have been said that you've taken on board and you kind of wish you knew when you started Anti-Diet Riot Club.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we had criticism after sort of the first year of running events. I was running events in this really small basement room, and we had someone rightly call us in about the lack of accessibility. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was looking for venues that weren't in a basement, mm-hmm. and looking for somewhere that I could afford, etc. And from that, I then realised that there was so much that we weren't doing for accessibility, and it's now become like really important foundationally to everything we do. Like we kind of go from there rather than seeing it as a, not an afterthought, but as it's like, it's a non-negotiable almost. It's a primary concern, yeah. And so I've learned so much about disability and the way that intersects with this movement as well, and the way that that for a lot of our community, that is access and disability is an intersecting identity, another issue that they're having to face, another form of oppression, and another avenue for body justice for them. You know, I have a bone condition myself, so I have been disabled, and it still wasn't on my priority list just because at that time I wasn't disabled. But I think now I realise I'm just so interested in that at any moment, you know, people can wake up disabled, and by society, by a world that isn't built for people with disability. And so it's so important for me to make sure we try and make our events and our workshops and community accessible, not just for people with, you know, physical or mental disabilities, but also with financial access. You know, people who, making a space that's welcoming for people who have anxiety disorders, or people who, you know, might have children and can't have the time, you know, trying to think about all of the ways in which people might have barriers to try and access the content and make things easier for them, rather than, you know, well, if you can't put the time and the work effort in, then you can't, you know, be a part of this course or this event or whatever. Trying to, yeah, be more understanding of everyone's, the obstacles in everyone's lives. Obviously we can't do it for everyone, and no event can be completely accessible, so we're always learning, but it's such a primary concern and interest for us now.
Was that one of the kind of key reasons you started the concept of the Anti-Diet Right van?
Yeah, one of the reasons was that we were essentially running events just in London, in small venues, and we realised from going to festivals and running workshops there, and people going, oh, like, when are you going to come to this part of England? When are you going to come to this part of England? And we were like, you know, finding venues, finding spaces, like, you know, it might be difficult. And it was really important that we tried to get out of London, out of our bubble. But it has some logistical difficulties. And then we realized also that even in cities, people, you know, it was still restricting access for people who lived in like urban areas. And it would be great if we could just try and get around as many places as possible. So the bus did come from that. It also came from the idea of, you know, like a campaign bus, being able to, a riot bus, being able to, like, you know, I don't know, shout things from the rooftop and just try and spread the message literally through the airwaves. But we still haven't been able to take it out on the road yet. So I'm really hoping this year we can, but I'm also prepared for potentially another lockdown. So the plan is August we're going to be able to get it out, so fingers crossed.
So excited. Well, I can't wait to go to a life drawing event on the bus. I'm like, get me naked on that bus, that's all I want.
Great.
I'm gonna change gears a little bit, and we love to start with this question usually, but we're mixing things up a bit today because why not. Would you mind telling us a bit about your relationship to your body growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mirror a lot of people's stories in that I started dieting pretty young. So around 13 was when I went on my first like official diet plan. Before then, I had a complicated relationship with my body. I was so tall. Like, I am so small right now. I basically stopped growing at the age of 11. So in my childhood, I was really huge compared to everyone else. And I also developed really quickly. So, and early, you know, I was the first person to wear a bra. I had boobs at like the age of 9 before, you know, every single other girl in my class, in my school. And so I think I just felt uncomfortable in that. I think I felt too big always. And then I yeah, that feeling continued into my teenage years, but it was definitely tied up in my relationship with my disability. I had operations when I was 7 and 11, and it meant that I was I developed a serious limp and was on crutches a lot, had a big scar, and had to stop moving and doing dance and stage school, and I couldn't do a lot of the things that I could do before, and I couldn't run around, I couldn't join in sports. I couldn't do anything high impact. And so while it didn't stop me from doing a lot of things that I loved, it did start to become increasingly more difficult to... I think it became increasingly more difficult to move. It became increasingly painful. And my focus on exercise and physio became kind of tied up with my leg. So there was this like two things happening at the same time. It was like getting more conscious of my body and also feeling very restricted by my leg. And then that kind of converged, and I started going on diets and exercising really obsessively, and to try and strengthen my leg was the reason, but it was actually to try and lose weight, to try and control my body, to try and take control of my body in some way. And then, yeah, I think that was a beginning of 10 years or so of on and off dieting. I mean, I tried so many different plans and extreme, some of them not so. And some of them successful, some of them not successful. You know, in my eyes at that time was like very quick weight loss, but always I would bounce back and put more weight back on, and then I would feel worse about my body, and then the cycle continued, and that's what I see in so many other people as well. You know, that's similar. It starts somewhere and then the cycle just gets worse and worse, and eventually kind of got myself out of it in my mid-20s. But God, there was still, even when I discovered body acceptance and the concept that diets weren't actually good for my body, because I had assumed that they were, I'm still experimenting with so many different, you know, ways of eating that I thought were just like healthier ways of eating. And they were still sort of definitely shrouded in diet culture. So it took me years and years and years to bring myself out of that.
What do you think was the turning point?
Finding the movement was definitely discovering people like Virgie Tovar, Gabby Fresh, Michelle Elman, God Not Scared on Instagram.
Yeah, we stan. We love Michelle.
Yeah, I had read Fat is Feminist Issue. I'd read, you know, Fatso in my, you know, when I was 19 for my thesis at university. I'd read so many incredible feminist and fat positive books, but I never thought they'd apply to me. It wasn't until I saw it being lived, I saw it being embodied, that I thought, wow, this is something that, you know, could liberate me, I guess.
Well, you know, I think that comes back so interestingly to what you were saying earlier of kind of part of the riot and kind of protest element of this is living joyfully, and how actually existing in a larger body, in a fat body, is such an act of protest. Just existing joyfully is a form of resistance. And I think, you know, you really embody that. And I so hear that of seeing those other people embody that, it just makes it seem possible.
It definitely does. I mean, when you see a fat woman living their life without apology, just sticking their finger up at diet culture, like, I'm going to do that. Yes, I struggle with, you know, bad days, and life isn't always like, you know, this riot, but it can be full of colour, full of joy, full of pleasure, full of sexuality, full of love, full of, like, you know, a wealth of other things. And actually putting myself and my body and my mind through these restrictive, or even not so restrictive, but even these sort of normative eating behaviours, and obsessing with how I look and obsessing with what I eat and how I move, that actually dims all of those things in my life and saps the energy, takes the energy away from that and towards these other things.
Well, I also feel like those things kind of other you from your body. It's like you said again, it's that disconnection, and how so much of this movement is about reconnecting to yourself and learning to trust yourself again.
Yeah, I love that. Have you read Lindo Bacon's Radical Belonging?
I have, and I actually just interviewed Lindo for Appearance Matters, and I almost couldn't, I mean, this is the classic thing that I have. I stop speaking when I'm too interested in listening. I just want people just to keep talking, and suddenly the time is up, and I was like, I had a whole list of questions here and I've not asked any of them, and what am I going to do? We've just got to put it out. But yeah, really, and I think that a lot of what you're saying again and thinking about you and what you do with Anti-Diet Riot Club and what Lindo was saying is how it all comes back to community and compassion for yourself, and with what you're saying about living joyfully and feeling joy in your body. I wonder if you can share some things that either that you've done through Anti-Diet Riot Club or for yourself personally, like what does bring you joy in your body?
I kind of love this question because actually every day my answer changes, which I think is a really important part for me for actually that why I say living authentically is I don't have this like self-care routine. Many people ask me for advice on my what works for me, what brings me joy, and it changes all the time. And I think like I like experimenting with different things that bring me joy and finding out what the Becky of today is wanting and needing and liking. Obviously there are certain things that I know and that I can reach out for, but I also just, yeah, I like sort of testing the waters a little bit. So what really is bringing me joy right now is my hula hoop.
Oh,
I've left it untouched and unspun for months and months, and so summer means the beginning of me picking up my hula hoop again, and it makes me so happy to twist and turn around and just spin around in circles to music. And yeah, music at the moment is bringing me so much joy and so much escape. I love dancing, I love finding songs that I love, and
what do you like listening to
down the road? At the moment, it's country music.
Oh, I love that for you.
I'm really into country, and I'm finding out so much about queer country music. Ooh. And country music is not this, like, you know, southern, white, southern, racist, conservative music. It's actually a lot of really radical country artists.
Well, I mean, obviously not to be a basic bitch, but... Dolly Parton is a storyteller and a very progressive one at that. Like, I mean, go back to her early works, unbelievable stuff.
And I think there's this tendency for like America to try and like paint out these singers as like the American dream, you know, an example of right-wing America, and actually they're not. And you know, country music takes so, you know, is inspired so much by like Black country music as well, and soul music, and just there's so many incredible, like, amazing LGBT country songs that are so spicy.
It's so, there is a lot of high camp, like, it's very, like, there's a lot of performance in country, which I feel like so harkens back to that, like, I don't know, incredible queer energy. And I feel like there was such a nod to that with Old Town Roads, like, a couple of years ago. Do you remember? That was, like, finally someone's kind of coming back to that high camp in country. Like, it makes me so happy.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like now there's a, you know, big kind of convergence of that queer culture, like Denim and Diamante and Lil Nas X.
Yes.
And, yeah, I'm really loving that. And I'm just loving exploring it and finding out about a type of music that I didn't know anything about. But I'm just obsessed with drum and bass or soul music, disco, like jungle, bashment. I love it all. It just depends on the day. I mean, at the moment, I'm working really hard. We're doing the Body Right Weekender in 2 weeks. It's taking up a huge portion of my time. But I got to escape in my camper van this week, which was so nice. I bought a camper van last year. I think it just makes me feel really independent and really adventurous. I feel like in the past, I thought I had to go on these massive journeys abroad to feel adventurous and to feel like it myself. That's when I really feel like myself, when I'm traveling or backpacking. Turns out I just need like little mini adventures or little day adventures. And trying to like foster that energy and that feeling, even just in the UK and in small ways, is really powerful for me.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that.
But Becky, why don't you tell us about this weekender?
So the Body Right Weekender is our online 5-day summit that we're hosting, starting on International No Diet Day on 6th of May. It's also Fat Liberation Month. So we've got, you know, over 15 different speakers and facilitators of workshops. We've got people like Regan Chastain doing an absolutely amazing presentation, just ripping apart the research into weight and health. We have the wonderful Vanessa Rochelle Lewis, who's the Ugly Black Woman on Instagram, talking about her incredible work around uglification and breaking down the beauty standard. We have a workshop called Pussy Gazing, which I'll leave to your imagination.
Okay, I mean, I'm coming to that. Sign me up.
We have Kareem Arthur, who's an incredible food journalist. She runs an organisation called The Healing Table, and she's doing a cooking club, and we're going to be talking about the healing power of food and then actually cooking together, which is going to be so much fun. As well as, you know, we're going to do a fat and trans inclusive yoga and a kitchen dance party, a panel on body ideals and body liberation in queer communities. Oh, there's just so much that we haven't been able to talk about at past events, and so that we wanted to do finally in kind of like a big package. And it's totally free, which is amazing. So people can just sign up and get all of that content for free, which is awesome.
Oh, Becky, it just sounds absolutely euphoric. I'm like, I'm going to everything.
Yay!
It's incredible. And so it's all online as well, right?
It's all online. So we've got almost 700 people signed up from all over the world. Speakers are, you know, from the US, from UK, from Canada, and one from Europe. It will also be available afterwards, so you can sort of buy packages starting at £15 that give you like lifetime access to the content as well. So I think we're going to start doing this every year. I've really loved running, organising something that can be accessed by people, you know, in countries all over the world. It comes with some difficulties, but I'd prefer that to running an event just in London of this size, that only certain people can come to and that people have to spend loads of money to get to. And, you know, we can make everything captioned and give transcripts and try and make it accessible to people. And yeah, it seems like a kind of the format that I feel like means we can reach as many people as possible, which for us is obviously we love doing the intimate work with people in our community. We love doing the, you know, workshops with only 20 people or for people to be able to gauge. But, you know, we also want to reach as many people as possible.
We feel like you're kind of constantly trying to highlight really exciting people. How do you decide what to shine a light on? Because I feel like you cover so many causes and topics.
Interesting. I think we just try and prioritise people who, most of the time, we try and prioritise people who live in more marginalised bodies. We don't always get that right. But I think for us, it's like, do they have a perspective that I feel our audience would really connect with in terms of like their identities? And are they saying something that's not just about self-love or just about like their own personal experiences? Are they saying something that's like runs deeper, that's talking about systems of power? Are they saying stuff that's political? Are they making sure they aren't being adding to those systems of oppression, like they aren't being ableist, or they aren't, you know, being incredibly gender normative in the way that they're talking about things? I think those are really important for us. And obviously we just connect with people and like their message. I mean, with Virgie, it's almost just like, you know, you can't not love what Virgie Tovar does. And so we just have to reach out to people who we love and their soul shines through. And then normally, because I'm so excited when I'm reaching out to them, they're just really excited. And that's where it comes from. I think people, there's no real rhyme and reason to it. It's just what's exciting us and who could use having their voice amplified as well. Like, we do take that into consideration, that we're not trying to give, we're not often giving platforms to like people who already have a massive platform, because their voice is already being heard, and we'll amplify it, but it doesn't mean that they should necessarily take the space of someone with a smaller platform.
I think with everything you do, it feels very organic and instinctual, and obviously like there is growth that's coming from, as the community grows, you receive more feedback. But it's like, from the first time I met you, you've always had this kind of incredible energy and drive, and just, yeah, it feels so authentic. I even remember seeing you at like the first event I came to that we kind of did together, and you were running around and putting all the stuff up yourself and like assembling massage beds, and I was like, who is this icon? Like, I was like, who is this goddess trying to make the world a better place? I was like, we need more Beckys.
Oh, that's so sweet to hear. I really loved that event for Valentine's Day when we did it was all about like self-pleasure and solo play, and it was so great.
I think about that conversation all the time. We had such a wonderful like panel conversation about masturbation. It was just divine. It was loads of women talking about vibrators. I was like, I can fuck with this
in this like really dark room that was like filled with like weird tinsel and like people having massages and like people getting drunk. And then we did a school strut dance afterwards, which was really, really great. I feel so blessed to have like brought people together in those kind of spaces. I know that's exactly why I do it. But I also feel really grateful just to have been in those spaces with people. And I love seeing the way that people, when they are around other fat people, when they're around people who are, you know, working on body acceptance, when they're around people who've struggled with their bodies. I mean, it just feels like being, you know, amongst friends, even if you don't know anyone's face in the room, it can feel, just like so wonderful to know that there are so many other people going through what you're going through. And when people come and they get involved in the discussion, or they get involved in the workshops, and they walk out with a smile on their face, and they feedback to us that, you know, since then they've been wearing shorts in the summer and no more like long trousers in the sweltering heat, or people who have, you know, finally started doing swimming, which they used to love before, but they haven't gone because they've had such a disordered relationship with exercise and hated being in a swimsuit. Or, you know, now that they go out to the beach with their kids. And I mean, it's not all down to us, but people will say like, after that event, I haven't dieted since. And I'm just like, that is, if one person can say that to me, that makes it all worthwhile.
Completely. No, well, you're doing incredible work, and the world is very lucky to have you in it.
Guys, I told you I'm menstruating. I'm going to cry.
come on. You're allowed to cry here. It's a safe space. Feelings don't scare us. This is a good place for it. We love to end on this question. I feel like you've answered a version of it, but what's something that you do? And I know you say you don't have a self-care routine, but what's one thing you like to do that makes you feel at home in your body that you come back to?
Masturbation?
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I have so many strange, like, I wake up always after a sex dream, like some sort of weird sex dream.
Wait, is this every night, or is this just
not
like
every night? No, okay. A lot.
That's lucky. I love that, but
it's kind of weird. And so like it I really love doing that in the morning. And I feel like also it just allows me to have, you know, appreciation for my body and spend time with my body. I love having baths. I know that's the cliche self-care thing, but
you're talking to a Pisces. I hear it.
Yeah. I'm a big P&B fan. Podcasts and a bath. That's what I love.
Also, throw in a wank. Bath, podcast, wank, done.
Nothing better. Like, some sex toys say they're waterproof, but they're not.
No, I've proved them wrong.
I have broken a few. and I think being outside in nature as well is definitely something that I would like to prioritize more, because I find every time I do that, you know, socks and shoes off, toes in the grass, I feel so much more at home in my body. You know, I live in Peckham, but I do live on a park, so not on a park, but like over a park. So I should like get out there and barefoot more often.
Well, I do. When I envision you, I think of you as like barefoot in a flowing gown at a festival, curly hair in the wind, frolicking. So like, that's how I'd like you to be out more in nature, so I can maintain that fantasy. Thank you.
that is me when there are festivals on. I feel like festivals make me feel like more myself and more my kind of like animalistic, wild, semi-naked, don't give a fuck self. I'm happy not being that the whole time. It's not sustainable. But I think that I like to embrace my like varying identities, and like, you know, there's lots of things in me and they're all contradictory, and that's totally fine. So embracing me on a different day is, you know, sometimes I'm stuck at home watching Netflix, or watching shite reality TV, and then the next week I'll like not look at my phone for 3 days and, you know, be frolicking around, rolling around in the field. So
And that's what keeps life exciting, that range.
Yeah, I contain multitudes.
Yeah, and I think it's good to hear and good to know, and I think everyone does, but I think it's so easy to feel like you have to be a certain way if you have one aspect of your identity. So yeah, have the range, enjoy the range,
especially when people nowadays have like a personal brand that they're putting out there, they know it or not, on social media. Feels like you have to be this stuck fixed identity, and I just think that's like philosophically but also practically just not true. Yeah. We're just constantly changing.
It's not sustainable, and the one constant is that we are constantly changing. That's the only thing that we can all agree on. So yes. It's like, why not embrace that? And I love that you do.
It makes it hard to answer these questions, though. Because I'm like, well, it depends what day you catch me on, babes.
Well, but that's the reality of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it means we just have to have you back on, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows which one you'll meet next time.
Oh, no, I love it. Well, I love the Becky that we had today. I love the Becky I spoke to yesterday, and all of the things that you do. Becky, can you give us a few places of where to find you, find your work? How are we going to find out about the Weekender? A few plugs.
Yeah, I mean, definitely head to bodyrightweekender.com. That's where you can sign up for free for the event. And then even after the event's happened, you know, it'll be live, and you can purchase access to the content even after the event's finished. But also come and find us on Instagram. That's where we hang out a lot. Anti-Diet Riot Club. We've also got onto TikTok. Oh my gosh.
I've been loving your TikToks. I had that everybody is a beach body stuck in my head for so long, and I've just been thinking about you glowing in the sunshine, being like, that's my girl.
I've resisted it for the whole of the year of lockdown. I don't know what was going on, but I just felt, I think I went on there and I found it incredibly fat phobic, and so it took me a long time to find the kind of right people to follow. So if you're the same about TikTok, then come follow us, and we can like try and build a community together, because it's harsh out there in TikTok land sometimes. But also antidietrightclub.co.uk, the website, is something we're currently like trying to invest more time into. We're building a blog there, and we want guest writers if anyone's interested in getting involved and writing pieces for us. We've also got this, I haven't even talked about it, but it's called the Anti-Diet Right Community, and that's opening its doors in June. So if you're listening to this and you feel like coming and joining our, you know, it's about 200 of us, and we have a cozy little corner of the internet where we all support each other, and have experts join us, and we do movement classes, and we do even like creative classes. We've had sewing classes, and we're doing an abstract art therapy class this week. So there's so much going on there, and it's just everyone's so lovely to each other. It makes me want to cry. So that's antidietriot.community, and it's all on the website.
And we will link to everything in the show notes.
Yeah, we love a cozy corner of the internet, so that's very on brand.
And it's away from traditional social media, which I think is the future for us. I mean, we love posting things, to all of the people that follow us, but we also know that we can create a kind of less toxic environment if we move away from Facebook and Instagram. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, Becky, love it. We love you. Thank you so much for speaking to us on the Body Photo.
Thank you so much for having me, girls. Love you loads.
Love you so. So, Nadia, one thing that we didn't actually fully get into with Becky, but we love that Becky does, is Anti-Diet Riot Club runs life drawing classes, which famously I once participated in, and it was very exciting to be naked in a room full of people because I love attention, so it was fantastic. Could you tell us a bit about the research behind why life drawing and body image kind of go hand in hand, and why it's so good for your body image?
Yeah, of course. So there are actually just a few studies that are focusing on life drawing and body image at the moment. They're all pretty recent, so from 2016 onwards, more or less. Most of them, or the ones that I'm aware of, are led by a researcher called Dr. Viram Swamy, who is a professor of psychology here in the UK. And pretty much exactly as you said, show that drawing a nude model has a positive effect on body image. So they're the, I was looking through a couple of the papers, and they're the paper that I thought would be quite fun to talk about. So it was published in 2017 in the Journal of Body Image, and Virem describes three studies, so it kind of helps unpick a little bit why it might be helpful. So the first study, there were three groups, so a comparison between the three groups. So you had one group where women were attending a life drawing class with a nude model. You had a second group where women were attending a drawing class with a clothed model, so a woman wearing jeans and a t-shirt or something like that. And then a third group where women attended a still life drawing class, so they had a bowl of fruit. And so each of the classes were an hour in length or thereabouts, and followed the same format. So, you know, in life drawing classes, there's normally like a quick pose session and then longer periods where the model was holding a pose. So they did that with both of the classes where they had the models. But then I thought it was quite funny with the fruit, they kind of rearranged the fruit positions to try and mirror that pattern. I was like, researchers really try the most, you know?
researchers are truly doing the most every single day.
I know, I was like, I mean, it's not supposed to be funny, but it tickled me.
No, it's delightful.
And the fruit doing its quick 1 minute poses.
The fruit doing its pose.
But anyway, so in the three groups, all the women, they completed a quick questionnaire before and after their drawing class, and what they found was that participating in a life drawing session that had a model in it, so a person, had an immediate positive effect on body image. And then when you look at the three groups, so drawing the fruit didn't influence women's body image at all, or definitely not significantly. Both drawing the model who was clothed and the nude model had a positive impact on the women's body image, but the drawing the nude model had a stronger, more positive impact than the clothed model. So actually seeing that naked body had that immediate boost and elevation in body image.
We've spoken about this before on the podcast, but I think there is something to seeing a body completely desexualized but naked and just kind of in different positions is so, I don't know, it's very like comforting and beautiful and just makes you appreciate bodies and all of their forms and movement and stillness. It's so important to see.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's seeing them desexualized, seeing them in movement, as you're saying, and you're kind of focusing on the body in a different way when you're drawing, because you're not focusing on it being like, oh, that bit, I don't like that bit. Ooh.
No, you're going like, look at that beautiful.
Well, yeah, you're like, how do I draw that? How do I draw that? And you,
yeah, because you see the body as the beautiful shapes that it is. And also, I have to say, on the other side of it, when being a model, it forces you to see how other people see you. And I found it really moving, being like, oh my God, all of these people saw this beauty in me. Like, you know, I know that, that not to roast my own chicken, I mean, I am very beautiful. But like, there's something about the tenderness of someone taking the time to draw the curves of your body and be like, at the end of the class, people are like, do you want this drawing I did of you? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, it's so, you know, it's really moving and beautiful.
It is, and there was tender is such a nice word to use. I think you're so good with vocabulary, honey, in terms of finding those expressive ideas. So yeah, I think
can I just say the girl, me, who was voted biggest teacher's pet,
really
appreciates hearing that I've got a great vocabulary. That is, I live for that.
You do. You always come out with these great lines where I use the same thing. Everything is super. Everything is fantastic or excellent. You know, like, same thing.
No, but then in my personal life, I say the same three words over. I say vibes and weird, and that's it. And I'm so boring.
Wild. Like, yeah, it's another one of mine.
Yeah, wild.
Oh, dear. Anyway, I want to tell you about these other two studies. I think it's really interesting. So the second study, the first study was just women. The second study included men as well. It was looking at whether it makes a difference if the nude model is the same gender as the person drawing. And kind of cutting to the chase quickly, it doesn't. That from this particular study, no difference whether if you were a woman, whether you're drawing a nude male model or female model, it still elevated your body image, and exactly the same for men. So if you were a man drawing, if you're drawing a woman, or if you're drawing a man, still you had an elevation in immediate body image, and it's what we call a state measure of body image. So it's just how you're feeling in the moment. It's not how your body image is all the time necessarily, but it's just in the moment, how you're feeling right now in your body. So that, again, it kind of adds to that picture. And then the third study kind of looks at it slightly differently, because it's looking at doing life drawing over time. So what does it mean if you attend a weekly course of life drawing sessions? Is that going to impact your body image differently? And so, and actually they looked at what we call trait body image. So that's more of your stable body image. What's your body image more like over time? So trait over time, state being in the moment. So looking at trait measures, so they followed, and a caveat on this study is that the sample size was really small, so it's only looking at 23 people, but there was 23 people, men and women, who hadn't done life drawing before, participating in 6 sessions of life drawing classes. And what they found was that for the group was that they had a increase in trait positive body image, so factors like body appreciation and body pride, an increase in embodiment, and a reduction in appearance anxiety. What it didn't find, and it might be just because the sample size was so small, is that there wasn't a reduction in factors of negative body image, like a drive for thinness or muscularity, so wanting to be thinner or wanting to be more muscular. So it didn't do that, but still we're seeing positive effects of doing this as a weekly practice.
Would you be able to tell me a bit more about what embodiment means?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So just very simply put, I think embodiment is how we feel at home in our bodies. So we talk about that a lot when we're talking about body image, how you feel connected and at home. And maybe a more formal definition is like the degree to which individuals experience a mind-body connection as a result of participating in embodying activities. So life drawing is an embodying activity, or spoken about as an embodying activity. Yoga is a classic example of an embodying activity, because it's got that mind-body connection. What I find really useful when looking at different terms and what they mean is that researchers often develop scales, because that's how they test things, right? So you're trying to test something and you have a series of questions to tap into a particular construct. So in a measure of embodiment, an example question is, or item that people have to respond to is, I feel that my body is a source of strength, endurance, and energy. So that kind of gives a bit of an indication of what embodiment is.
I feel like we need a whole knowledge noodle on embodiment just in and of itself. So I think the listeners can have that to look forward to, because this is all so interesting. But Nadia, again, thank you for this slurp of delicious knowledge.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for flirting with me. Thank you for listening to The Body Protest.
We really hope you've enjoyed this episode, and it would mean the world to us if you could subscribe, rate, and review.
You can follow Honey on Instagram at HoneyKinney.
And you can follow Nadia at Nadia.Craddock.
This podcast is produced and edited by the glorious Daisy Grant.
And it's brought to you by the Pink Protest Podcast Network.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way, so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.